All right, so diving in today, we're looking at a case that really shook things up, especially in the tech world. Sega v. Accolade, decided back in 1992 by the Ninth Circuit, but its impact, well, it's still being felt.
Yeah, it's one of those landmark decisions, you know. Back then, the digital world was kind of like the Wild West, still figuring out all the rules.
Yeah.
And this case, it really helped define where the lines are drawn when it comes to copyright and innovation, especially in software.
Totally. And at the heart of it all is this seemingly simple question. When can you, like, take apart someone else's software? Where's the balance between creators' rights and, you know, the need for competition and progress? To really grasp what's going on, we need to go back to the early 90s, the golden age of 16-bit gaming. We've got Sega, the kings of the hill with their Genesis console, and then there's Accolade, a competitor trying to get a piece of that action.
All right, Sega was huge back then. They not only made the Genesis console, but they also tightly controlled which games could be played on it through a strict licensing system. You wanted to make a Genesis game. You had to play by Sega's rules. But Accolade, they decided to go a different route. They wanted to develop games for the Genesis, but without getting Sega's permission or having access to their secret sauce, so to speak.
So how do you even do that? Create games for a system you basically have no insider knowledge of. It's like trying to build a house without blueprints.
That's where the magic, or maybe the controversy, of reverse engineering comes in. Accolade used a process called disassembly. They basically took Sega's compiled code, the stuff that the Genesis could read, and translated it back into something closer to human-readable language. Think of it as taking apart a clock to see how all the gears and springs work together.
Okay, so just to be clear, they weren't making straight-up copies of Sega's games, right?
No, not at all. Their goal wasn't to steal Sega's creativity. You know, the characters, the stories, the music, all that stuff. They were solely focused on figuring out how the Genesis worked on a technical level. What were the nuts and bolts, the essential requirements needed to make a game cartridge that the Genesis could actually run? Disassembly at the time was really the only practical way to do that.
Got it. So it's more like figuring out the rules of the game rather than stealing the game itself.
Exactly.
Now, things get even spicier with the introduction of Sega's Trademark Security System, or TMSS for short. This added a whole other dimension to the legal battle.
Yeah, it went beyond just copyright. Basically, right. In a newer version of the Genesis III, they included this TMSS. Whenever you put in a legitimate licensed game cartridge, the Sega logo would pop up on the screen. It was a way for them to authenticate their games, mm-hmm. to assure consumers they were getting the real deal.
A kind of digital stamp of approval. But how did that become a problem for Accolade?
Well, because Accolade had successfully reverse engineered the Genesis, their games could also trigger that TMSS. So even though they were unlicensed, you'd still see the Sega logo flash when you played their games on the Genesis III.
So Sega's own security measure ended up kind of working against them. Makes you wonder why they would even implement something that could potentially open them up to legal challenges.
Right. I mean, it's likely they were trying to protect their market share, discourage unlicensed developers, make sure that everyone knew a real Sega game when they saw one. But maybe they didn't fully anticipate that someone could reverse engineer their system to the point that their own trademark would be displayed on an unlicensed game. And this is what allowed Sega to then claim trademark infringement on top of copyright infringement.
Ah, so it backfired, big time. And that brings us to the legal showdown. Sega sued Accolade, alleging both copyright infringement because of the disassembly process and the copies that were made during that process, and trademark infringement because of that whole Sega logo situation. Let's start with the copyright side of things, specifically the concept of fair use, which is kind of a tricky but super important part of copyright law.
Absolutely. Fair use, it's like a safety valve in copyright law. It says, okay, under certain circumstances, you're allowed to use a copyrighted work without getting permission from the owner. It's all about striking a balance, making sure the copyright law doesn't completely stifle creativity, criticism, and yes, innovation.
So how do courts determine if something falls under fair use? There's got to be some kind of like a test or something, right?
Right. There are four main factors that courts look at, and the Ninth Circuit applied these pretty rigorously in the Sega v. Accolade case.
Hit me with those factors.
Okay, so first up is the purpose and character of the use. In this case, the court saw that Accolade wasn't trying to just copy Sega's games and make a quick buck. Their goal was to create their own games, their own original works, that just happened to be compatible with the Genesis. It was a different kind of purpose, and that mattered to the court.
So intention really played a key role here.
Absolutely. Huh. Second, there's the nature of the copyrighted work. Here, the court made a distinction between creative works, like the actual gameplay, characters, and story of the game, and the more functional code that makes the game run. They recognize that functional code is, well, it's more utilitarian. Mm-hmm. It's less about artistic expression and more about making the machine work. And that means it deserves a slightly different level of copyright protection.
Interesting. So not all code is created equal in the eyes of the law.
Right. The third factor is the amount and substantiality of the portion used. Accolade only copied what they absolutely needed to understand how to interface with the Genesis. They weren't lifting entire chunks of code, just the essential bits of information.
Makes sense. And finally, there's the effect of the use upon the potential market for or value of the copyrighted work. This one often carries a lot of weight. So how did the court see Accolade's actions impacting Sega's market?
They saw Accolade's games as adding to the market, not taking away from it. They weren't direct replacements for Sega's games. They were something new. Yeah. And you could argue that having more games available, even from third-party developers, would actually make the Genesis more appealing to consumers. So the court saw it as healthy competition, which is generally a good thing.
Right, because a rising tide lifts all boats, as they say. So taking all these factors into account, the Ninth Circuit reached a pretty groundbreaking conclusion about reverse engineering. What was the gist of it?
They basically said that reverse engineering is fair use when it's the only way to get at the functional elements of a program, the parts that aren't protected by copyright, and when there's a legitimate reason for doing so, like creating a compatible product. This wasn't just a win for Accolade. It was a statement about preventing companies from using copyright to stifle innovation and lock down entire tech ecosystems.
That only way part seems pretty crucial. Like, you can't just reverse engineer something because you're curious or lazy. There needs to be a real need for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The court was worried about companies creating what they called a functional monopoly. Like, imagine if a car company said, hey, you can't work on our cars unless you're one of our authorized mechanics. That'd be pretty messed up.
Right.
And they drew a parallel to that with software.
So you're saying that Sega was essentially trying to say, hey, you can't tinker with our console's innards even if you're trying to create something new and cool.
Yeah.
It's almost like a warranty void if removed sticker on the core functions of their technology.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The court was saying, hey, the fundamental way your tech works shouldn't be locked down by copyright. It needs to be accessible so others can innovate and compete fairly.
That's a huge win for, well, basically anyone who uses or develops technology. But what about that trademark claim? Sega was pretty adamant that Accolade displaying their logo was a big no-no.
But the court didn't buy it. They pointed out that it was Sega's own TMSS that caused the logo to appear. Accolade wasn't going out of their way to trick people into thinking their games were officially licensed by Sega.
So Sega's attempt to protect their trademark ended up being their undoing. It's almost poetic justice, you know?
Right. It shows you how tricky it can be to apply old laws to new technology. The law is always playing catch-up, and that's why this case is still so important, especially for law students. Sega v. Accolade is like a textbook example of how the courts have to balance intellectual property rights with the need for innovation, especially in the fast-paced world of software.
It's a classic case of trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. The law has to adapt.
Absolutely. And Sega v. Accolade set a precedent that's still relevant today, especially with things like software interoperability, APIs, and even the right to repair movement. It's a cornerstone of tech law.
It really shows how the judiciary plays a vital role in shaping the future of technology. It's not just about applying the letter of the law, but also considering the spirit of innovation and competition.
Exactly. And it's interesting to note that even after this big legal battle, Sega and Accolade ended up settling things in 1993. Accolade even became an official Sega licensee. So sometimes, even after a knockdown, drag-out fight, companies can find common ground and move forward.
That's kind of heartwarming, in a way. But to wrap things up, the key takeaway from Sega v. Accolade is that reverse engineering isn't inherently illegal. It can be considered fair use, but only under very specific conditions.
Right. The court made it clear that copyright law shouldn't be used as a weapon to prevent competition and innovation. There needs to be room for others to build upon existing technology and create new things.
And that's a principle that still resonates today. Think about it in our hyper-connected world, where software is everywhere and everything talks to everything else. The ideas established in Sega v. Accolade are more important than ever. How do we balance the rights of creators with the need for interoperability, for open systems? How does the right to repair fit into all of this? These are all questions we're still grappling with, and understanding this case is fundamental to navigating those challenges. So there you have it, folks. Sega V Accolade, a blast from the past with lessons that continue to shape the future of technology.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.